Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of this podcast. And today I have on the line Roxanne Emmerich. And Roxanne has just written a book called Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Will Love. Good day to you, Roxanne. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And how about you?
Wonderful. She's joining us from Minneapolis today and just informed me that the weather there is as nice as it is in Southern California. I'd like to let our listeners know a little bit about you, Roxanne, before we move further into kind of the questions about the book. She's the CEO of the Emmerich Group. Roxanne has consulted with hundreds of top performers amongst financial institutions as well as leaders from almost every industry. Her book, Profit Growth Banking, has been called the Bible of Successful Business in that industry. Sales and Marketing Management Magazine named her one of the nation's 12 most requested speakers, and she is a three-time recipient of the Entrepreneur of the Year Award. A 20-year certified management consultant, Roxanne has proven time and time again that the ultimate success or failure of a company begins on the inside. Her new book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Will Love, outlines a system for bringing more fun and consequently more money to your business. She is renowned for her ability to transform ho-hum workplaces into massive results-oriented bring-it-on environments, igniting a give-more passion among employees and managers that catapults the performance of the business and boosts morale and profits to new levels. She conducts her famous kick-butt kickoff workshop across the country for leaders and employees, resulting in immediate cultural shifts and tangible results, often in less than 30 days. She's in the National Speakers Hall of Fame. She's been noted in Wall Street Journal, Woman's Daily Magazine, CNN, CBS, and she's just an all-around great gal. She is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin and resides in Minneapolis with her husband and children. Roxanne, it's great having you on the line with us today. I appreciate you taking this time to impart some of your wisdom about how to make a healthier and happier workplace. You know, one of the things that you mentioned in the book, there was a gal, Sarah, who was actually riding on a Southwest Airlines flight. And one of the things that our listeners may or may not know is just kind of the philosophy of Herb Kelleher and how he created an environment of love. Can you give us some of those stories, that story in particular, and how you've used that in consulting, and maybe a little bit more about that experience that Southwest Airlines created for not only their customers, but for their employees?
Well, Southwest is an amazing story. Here's a company that, you know, even after 9/11 didn't even have a down quarter in an industry where everyone was losing their shirt. And they did it through some pretty simple stuff and keeping it really, really simple and having it be a lot of fun and keeping people focused around simple and having it be fun. And they demonstrate it. They hire for it. They encourage it. They have rituals for it. And just by bringing that in, you know, people say, well, you know, it's fun in the workplace, a bottom line issue. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the companies that have built not only fun, but also an environment where people can set the world on fire and set the goals and go after the goals and be unstoppable and have fun doing it, all of that nurtures our soul, because we really want to come into a workplace so we can kick some butt and take some names and have some fun. And so fun isn't just about goofy things like, you know, parties. It's about the fun of winning, the fun of celebrating the wins, the fun of whenever you hear a new idea, giving it a high five and moving it through, and the fun of daily huddles where you're sharing the testimonials and experiences and having fun with that. So it's all about moving into not just fun, but fun packaged with massive results.
Yeah, well, you know, Patagonia is one of those companies that's also got a real fun place, and the owner of the company has written a great book. And can you comment about the culture of these companies, that really the inherent philosophies that go on inside of these wonderful organizations that allow their employees to bring their creativity to work, to bring their meaning to work, to bring purpose to work, and then to create this an amazing alignment with inside of them for good profits and collaborative learning that's going on. Explain some of the characteristics that they have.
Okay, great question. Well, I think one of the characteristics is that it's about getting people aligned with the right work for them. And, you know, we've all been in that position where it's just like, this doesn't feel like the right fit. And sometimes it's not, and that's okay. I just recently read that 80% of employees feel that they're in a job where they hardly ever get to use their best skills and mindsets and abilities. And how unfortunate is that? And so it's about being able to bring that to the table. Not that we don't have to deal with some basic things that we don't want to do, excuse me, but along with that, you know, there needs to be that other expression of who we are that we get to bring into our work and have fun with. But the real key, Greg, is that people understand a real key distinction that is understood by so few of us, and that is that life gives to the givers and takes from the takers. And the world has a perfect accounting system. And so when we get about customer success as opposed to focusing on customer satisfaction, and we're just passionate about making sure our customers succeed, it makes us succeed. That's what draws business toward us and with paying premium prices. And so not only does the business come in, but it's fun business because why would a customer complain when they know we're passionate about making sure that they win?
So what do you think some of the issues are? I mean, we're sitting right on top of a real explosive thing with GM. And most of us know that in the 70s, GM was the world's largest corporation. And Deming came in to the Japanese and gave away some trade secrets there. And that we didn't really follow those. And we kind of siloed things. You know, there were these silos inside of GM. What are some of the things that you believe are the downfalls or the bad part of people that come to work and say, you know, I'm entitled to have my heated parking place, you know? And what is it, this collaborative environment that needs to take place to make success inside of a company?
Well, that's a great question. You know, as you're bringing that up about the heated parking space, the question we have to all ask ourselves at the end of the day is am I about me or am I about making a difference? And there's a big difference between the performance of the self-consumed versus those committed to making a difference. And it shows up in the behaviors of individuals, and it shows up in the results of companies. And so when companies get about only the bottom line becomes elusive for them. That game just can't be won. The game of greed is one that eventually gets sniffed out, and it always turns out bad. It's just a matter of when. And so when you look at companies that are really about making a difference, they're attracting business during a really down economy. They're attracting business and they're attracting good things to them.
Amazing. Yeah, it is. It's true. And so in GM's case, what do you think went wrong?
Oh, I think there's so many levels. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago that the cash value of the stock was worth more than the market price of the stock. You know, that's amazing to have messed that up in that shorter period of time. But, you know, there were so many different pieces. There was the we against they thing. You know, whenever you have the union fights and it's we against they, no one can come out winning at the end of the day on that. And so, you know, certainly that's a problem. But another is the strategy. I mean, the strategy, they were very vocal about shooting for making a car that was inferior. And that was, it was a planned obsolescence strategy. Very unfortunate, and because what that really says is to the consumer is, we're seeing what we can get away with here because it's better for us. And I think we've come into that level of consciousness now where we now know that that never works that way. It's just a matter of time. So when you get about making a really good product and when you get about making a really good service, business comes your way because people get the feel for, you know, I'm a stand for you, and so therefore trust me, because it's clear that I'm taking a stand for you. I'm not just doing this for the greed.
What suggestion do you have for our business owners out there that are listening that say, you know, I know that people come to work and they've got the I am part of themselves and they come to work with their own purpose and their own values and their own talents and their own vision. And if you look at it, it's kind of like a little triangle with them in the center. And how do you help these companies align toward this greater vision of the company and to keep them all happy while they're doing it?
Well, first of all, I think that hiring people who believe in your cause is very, very important. And sometimes people will say they believe in the cause, or they don't really believe in the cause. They just want the job. And so one of the things that we do when we go into a company is we do this thing called a kick butt kickoff. And one small piece of that is in about 4 minutes, we have individuals at their tables, everyone in the whole organization do this together. We define what extraordinary looks like. And we make sure it fits the rules that, number one, it has to be of service to others. And it has to be visible, and it has to be something that just stretches their heart and is something that, you know, is simply said in a way that's fourth grade language that just is compelling. Well, by the time they spend that 4 minutes going through this process that we give them, they're up on their chairs screaming to be called on because they so want to convince the rest of the people on their team, this is what we're about, guys, this is what we're about. And so when the different tables all share that and they come down to a vote, people are out of their minds with crazy excitement for, yeah, we're going to get about something. We're not just going to come and do our job anymore.
Interesting. That's good. That's a great philosophy. And, you know, you talk about in the book that you want all employees to be leaders in the company. And kind of where do you draw the line between what they want and really what the other top leaders want in the company?
Well, I don't know if it's so much about drawing the line. It's about the way that we communicate and about having maturity in our communication. And so when we communicate that we want something in a certain way, every good leader wants what every good employee wants, because they're thinking like entrepreneurs. They're thinking like about how to be of service, and so there shouldn't be a whole lot of breakdown between those. And so, you know, what's amazing is I've seen receptions turn around the culture of an organization. You know, they see the person who's poo-pooing something and making a big deal out of something that shouldn't be made a big deal of, and they go and they calm that down and get people thinking, you know, good sane thoughts about that. And they see somebody not handling an order right, and they step on up and make that order piece happen correctly and make sure that all that's coming together. And so at every level, when they answer the phone, to develop the business with that client and the relationship, they are, you can tell the allergies have just hit Minneapolis, they are taking a stand for the organization and saying, hey, I'm going to make this great while I'm here. I'm going to make this great. And so they have in their heart this burning desire to be something really fabulous and to make some big difference. And, you know, Greg, it's my belief that we all have it inside of us. But what happens is we come in to work with other people shooting wildly for mediocrity, and it doesn't take more than a couple of days, and we're shooting wildly for mediocrity. And then 20 years go by, and we didn't even notice that we missed those 20 years of really stepping up to the plate and creating a massive difference.
Well, you know, one of the things that you articulate is that you come from the banking industry, and this banking industry has gone through just an incredible upheaval here in the last, oh, probably 6 months. And can you give us a little insight on maybe what you think the banking industry should have done as a result of kind of its, I know it's financial collapse, but in reality, we've seen huge layoffs of employees, and we know what that costs employers in the long run to actually find that new talent again and bring them back into the industry. Any insights there for us?
Absolutely. Well, I have one division of my company that just works with community banks. Now, community banks are doing great for the most part, and they never got into the goofy stuff, and they weren't about the greed, and they're having a great time right now and great business. There's some bad loans because business is bad right now in many cases, but many of them are doing so, so well because they've always been about their communities. They're the ones who are stepping up to the plate with their communities, teaching people financial literacy and donating things to their community. They've been about the right thing. So it's no accident that they're thriving right now when the big banks that were about the next quarter have gotten the lesson in that you just can't manage that way. It just doesn't work. And what's so amazing is, you know, we've taken banks that hadn't grown in more than 2% in over 10 years, and they grow 35% annualized the next 30 days after you work with them. That's powerful, because when people come alive and say, boy, I want to be great with customers. I don't want to just take orders anymore. I want to help people get what they need. And I want to look at cute little kids and think, are they going to college? I better help them. When you shift your mindset to be of service to people, it's amazing how without any sales skills that are added, everything goes so much better. And that's the message that all businesses need, not just the banking community. You know, and if it works in banks, where, I mean, let's face it, you know, I came through life as a banker myself and had my first decade of my life spent in the banking industry. You know, there's a lot of people with pinstripes across their eyeballs there, and these are not fun people. And if you can make banking fun, and where people will walk into a bank and say, wow, what just happened here? This is amazing. I'm taken such good care of. If you can do that in a bank, you can do that anywhere.
Well, so Roxanne, you just mentioned community banks over these multinational. What is it that you believe that, and you said that people, the executives, are hiring for emotionally intelligent people, people that can help the customer, can look at their situation and be more empathetic and understanding. What is it about these big multinational banks that, as you see it, with thousands and thousands of employees, they kind of went wrong versus copying the mold of these smaller banks?
Well, I think they went wrong in remembering that there's people involved. You know, it's pretty easy to overlook that when you get all about balance sheets and asset liability management and all the stuff of banking, and they considered a smart banker or somebody who could do all these special kind of deals and mess with all the derivatives and all those kind of things that we all knew they were funky. But the more people couldn't explain them, the more people left them alone to go do these funky things. And so they missed the message of banking's not about derivatives, and it never was. They completely got off task. Banking is about, hey, here's this young couple. They need a house. Let's go help them finance a house. But they're also going to need to start saving. Let's show them how to do that. When we get down to the fundamentals of helping people, it's a miracle how quickly things transform. And you know, I look at we have an organization that we're working with that this last quarter said that they hit every goal in every market without exception. Most of them doubled. Well, their competitors at the same time are saying, "Oh my gosh, the end of the world is here. We can't. Nothing's working. Isn't it awful?" And so the big message is it has nothing to do with what's going on out there. It has to do with what's going on in here. So it always has to do with what's going on in here.
So it's really more being more concerned and more empathetic, better communication skills, understanding our lines of communication with inside the organization. You know, you talk about these energy vampires in the book, and that's an interesting term and one that's been used a lot. Can you tell our listeners about these energy vampires inside of companies and how they kind of, pardon me, but screw up fun?
You bet. Okay, so all of us have come into our organizations on Monday morning and we're like, woohoo, excited, and life is good, and we're happy, and all is good. And then, you know, you walk by that certain person and they tend to do these things to us, and they suck our energy dry just by having that one look. And you know, they tend to be the whiners, the victims, the excuse makers. And they kind of have the corner of the market of pulling the energy out of people. You know, and the honest truth is, Greg, we've all been the energy vampire. I mean, we all have those days. And so one of the things that we teach our organizations is to have rituals that make it safe to, when somebody's being one of those, to stop them in their tracks and say, you know, you need to stop that. And if somebody has an ongoing history of that, I don't know if you've seen the statistics on this. It's quite alarming. About, what is it, 96% of employees said that they wish that their management would more aggressively manage low performers. That's kind of profound. You know, what they're saying is, we're begging you to deal with these messes. Please, please, please help us. So I strongly encourage that organizations have what I call the conversation. And the conversation is what we give to people who have an attitude that's really getting in the way, and it's permeating the organization. And it goes as simply as this. I'm so excited about where our team is going, and my sense is that you don't share that excitement. But that's okay, because maybe this isn't your thing. And if this isn't your thing, you've got to go find your thing. And so, you know, what that conversation is about is, you know, you can choose joy or you can choose misery. We always have the choice of one or the other. And right now, I'm asking you to make the choice. And it's a really healthy thing to do for people, because so many people get so much energy by sucking it out of other people. And they don't even know that they're doing it or really want to do it at a conscious level, but they do it regardless, and it's painful and it's hard to be around. So very, very important to understand that anyone can have the conversation with anyone, and it's a gift. Because mm-hmm. What you're really doing is you're inviting them to step up and choose joy. And when they really don't even know that that's their choice, they kind of keep blaming external circumstances for what's going on.
So really what you're saying in essence is empowering people and liberating this corporate soul is really one of actually giving people a lot more leeway, allowing them, as it looks like, you know, to make mistakes, but learn from their mistakes and learn quickly. Would that be true?
Yeah, it's definitely that too. And it's also, you know, people need to understand too that there's still the accountability of the result. People keep talking about activities, activities, and activities. So if you ask somebody, did you get this accomplished? And they go, well, I sent the email. Well, if you didn't ask for it, if they sent the email, then they're not talking about the result. One of the things that we teach our organizations is that all you have to do is listen to the organization conversation for about 3 minutes, and you will know exactly where this company is going and how they're doing. Because there are companies who use excuses, and there are companies who speak in all kinds of fluffy language. They never really say they're going to do something. They just kind of ponder their navel, and everything's fluffy. Nobody ever sets concrete goals about what they're going to do and how they're going to, or define concrete ways to make it happen. And so everybody's chasing their tail all day long and being overwhelmed with busyness, but not getting about the results. And so, you know, the other part of the equation is that people have to be accountable themselves for delivering the results and not just being friendly at work, although that's part of it. It's also about, hey, I said I was going to do something, so, you know, you'll walk through walls for me because I'll prove to be trustworthy, because if I say I'm going to do something, then by golly, I'm going to get it done.
Well, you know, in your last chapter of the book, you say one last thing, and a quote by John Wooden, don't let what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. And you say, in the end, you have a motivated workplace that is more human, with people nurturing each other, celebrating each other's successes. So in reality, if you were to say one last thing here to our listeners about what it is that makes a fun workplace, a more exciting place to come to work, a more aligned workplace, where people are feeling accomplished, that they've got meaning in their work, what would be the creme de la creme you would give them?
I'd say be the miracle. You know, be the one who takes a stand, because leadership is not a position, it's a way of being. Be the one that takes a stand to make your organization work and to not buy into the concept of recession. Decide that recession's for people out there. We're not going to play. We're going to play our own game, and we're going to win, and we're going to celebrate the wins, and we're going to have fun, and we're not going to allow the victimhood and excuses. Just be the miracle by being the stand for the good behaviors.
That's great advice. It's awesome advice. Now, for our listeners, can you tell them a little bit more about your organization, some of the things you're doing, where this book can be gotten, I would presume? It's still in, actually hasn't come out yet, is that right, or is it out now?
It comes out on the 20th of April on Amazon, and it'll be in all the bookstores by the 19th of May, but it starts entering the bookstores about the 4th of May.
Okay.
So it'll be out in a few weeks.
Okay.
And but you can also right now, you can buy it right now on our website, on our Thank God It's Monday website. So it's certainly available there, but it'll be available everywhere that books are sold, of course.
Okay.
And what our organization does is we work with organizations to have transformations for them. And we do all kinds of things to kind of integrate to make things happen, including one of the favorite things our clients just love is that every Monday morning all their employees get an audio message that lasts for 1 minute, that's a message on how to be amazing at work and how to really live your life with power. So these little Thank God It's Monday messages really transform an organization, because everyone learns the same message at the same time. And so it becomes the theme for the week of, oh, okay, this week we're working on no excuses, not to give them, not to receive them. What to say instead of giving an excuse that builds the confidence that, okay, I got it, I blew this result, but I'm all over this, so this doesn't happen again.
So where do they go to get these little messages? I presume they have to sign up through your organization, but if they just wanted to receive, I don't know, are these SMS text messages? Are they voicemail? How do they get them?
They just go up to Think That's Monday and inquire about them, and someone can help you figure out how to receive those as well.
Super, super. Well, so Roxanne, thanks so much for being on the podcast with us today. The book is Thank God It's Monday. It's Roxanne Emmerich, and it's How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Will Love. It's been a true pleasure having you on, and I've appreciated the time you've spent imparting your wisdom about just ways to make the workplace more fun and more meaningful.
Thanks so much, Greg. It was my pleasure being with you.
Appreciate it. You have a good evening.
Thank you.